Teenagers might recognize that music. Their parents might cringe at the sound of it. It's the theme song to the video game Grand Theft Auto, in which players advance through the criminal ranks by carrying out murders and other violent crimes. Minors would have been barred from buying that game in California, but today the Supreme Court agreed with a lower California court, ruling that the California ban on selling violent video games to minors is a violation of the minors' First Amendment rights. Writing for the majority, Justice Antonin Scalia said that if the state isn't restricting other media, say Saturday morning cartoons, it can't restrict the sale of this.
I got exactly what he came for. Plenty of murder to go around.
Yeah. A clip from the game Bulletstorm, which also would have been banned. Emily Bazelon is legal affairs editor for Slate Magazine. Emily, help us with this, because as we said, the justices in the majority said the state law violated the free speech rights of minors. But don't we often ban the sale of things to minors? Pornography comes to mind.
Right. Well, actually, that's the one that does come to mind, because it's really the only exception the court has carved out, where they've said, since the 60s, that kids aren't allowed to buy magazines like Playboy that have sexually explicit content. But the way this case was framed, it was treated as a whole separate category of violent content. And the court said, we don't have any tradition in this country of having the government restrict kids' access to violent material.
And what was the case California was making? Were they trying to make the case that violence was pornographic? I mean, how were they, what case did they make for banning the sale of these videos?
They made the case that there is research showing that the videos cause kids to become more aggressive and violent themselves. And so one of the big disputes between Justice Scalia's majority opinion and Justice Breyer's dissent is whether that research really holds up. And Scalia said that it didn't.
What else did Scalia say? Because we know Grimm's fairy tales made their way in here. So what else did he say?
Well, there's a wonderful passage in his opinion where he is talking about children's literature and how violent it can be. And you're right, yes, he mentions Grimm's Fairy Tales and Lord of the Flies. And then he talks about movies and dime store novels and the 1950s panic over comic books, in which several states banned the sale of comic books. And, it's really a defensive lowbrow culture. At one point, he says, reading Dante is unquestionably more cultured and intellectually edifying than playing Mortal Kombat. But these cultural and intellectual differences are not constitutional ones. So the idea here is that we have to really look at this content and decide whether the government has really proved it has a compelling interest in keeping it out of the hands of children.
Was he also sort of protecting, in a way, new technology?
Yes, absolutely. And that's a dispute between his opinion and Justice Alito's concurrence, where Scalia is saying, look, every time a new technology comes up, we worry that it's going to have a different effect on kids. And there's just no reason to think that's true about video games. And he's quite dismissive of the notion that the interactive aspect of video games is really anything new. Whereas Justice Alito, in his opinion, says, wait a second, we just really don't know enough about this technology yet, and it looks like it is different, so we should defer to the state of California on that.
But he also concurred that he thought California was too vague in defining violence.
Exactly. He would have struck down the statute on a completely different ground.
Right. But what about the impact of this ruling? You say different categories, but doesn't this open the door to challenging other states' laws or rules that maybe don't ban but restrict the sale of violent video games to kids? I mean, right now, in some states, a parent is required to be present.
Right. Well, the video game makers could start challenging those laws, certainly. But I think one thing that's important about Scalia's ruling is that it puts a lot of stock in the voluntary rating system that the video game makers themselves came up with. And this is like the PG and R-rated ratings that we're used to thinking about for the movies.
But these aren't laws, are they?
Well, exactly, and that's the crucial difference. They're a voluntary private rating system. When a kid tries to sneak into an R-rated movie and isn't allowed in, that's the cinema's decision. The cops don't get called. And that is one of the key distinctions that that Scalia gives for saying the voluntary systems are the kind of oversight that you know, we might want to encourage, but that the government ban is going too far.
Well, let's make sure we have covered also the Supreme Court's other decision today. They upheld an injunction against Arizona's campaign finance law, which gives extra public funds to publicly funded candidates whose privately funded rivals are outspending them, in other words, matching funds. The court said that's a violation of the First Amendment right to free speech. Now, this court has tied money to free speech before, giving corporations and unions the right to spend money on candidates, you know, equating it with speech. So that's maybe not surprising, but the justices who wrote the majority said they don't disagree with public financing itself, just these extra funds.
Right. So we have here a really pointed 5-4 split. It's the typical ideological split between the court's more conservative and more liberal members. And what the majority said was, look, you can have public financing where in the beginning a state government or the federal government says, hey, this candidate can have, say, $500,000. What you cannot do is tie the amount of the public financing to the amount that the opponent is spending. And the reason Arizona did that in this case, it's a way of actually making candidates use these public financing laws, because traditionally the amounts have been either usually too low, or if they risk being too high, then, you know, the state is overspending. That's not a good thing right now, especially. And so they've really been this mechanism, which seemed like they're a promising way of allowing different candidates to compete and preventing corruption, but they've been underutilized. Well, and Arizona seemed to have found a way around that, and now that will not be allowed anymore.
Well, is this a death blow then for campaign financing? Who's going to choose public financing if you know that there's no way you're ever going to match your privately financed opponent because the gates have been opened to allow all sorts of corporate and union money?
I think that's right. It is a major blow to public financing in terms of a system that was actually working. And, you know, one way to think about what Arizona was doing is we have 50 states. They can be a laboratory for trying out new ideas. And Arizona had found this promising route that was actually increasing the amount of overall spending in elections. And yet that avenue is no longer available. And that is a lot of what Elena Kagan's dissent is complaining about.
That's Emily Bazelon, legal affairs editor for Slate Magazine, on two decisions from the Supreme Court today, effectively wrapping up their session. And down the road, we'll take a look at what that session says to Emily and others. Emily, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.